Welcome to the ITE Talks Transportation Podcast from the Institute of Transportation Engineers. Each month, we'll bring you conversations with thought leaders in transportation on the future of the industry. Thanks for joining us for another episode of the ITE Talks Transportation Podcast.
So glad you could join us for this month's episode. I'm your host, Bernie Wagenblast. The 11th edition of the Manual of Uniform Traffic Control Devices, better known as the MUTCD, came out in December of 2023. Kathy Falk, a vice president with Kim Lee Horn, was chair of the ITE delegation which contributed to the latest edition. She's my guest on this month's episode, and we'll talk about some of the significant changes in the manual and more. Kathy, thanks so much for joining us here on ITE Talks Transportation.
Thanks, Bernie. I'm excited to be here today.
As I said in the introduction, we're going to be talking about the MUTCD. I think a lot of the listeners are familiar with the MUTCD, but for those who aren't, can you give us sort of a big picture idea of what has changed with the 11th edition of the MUTCD, please?
Sure. I'll start a little bit with what the MUTCD is. You know, we may have listeners who are listening to one of their first podcasts through ITE. Maybe they're a student or a newcomer to the industry, and they haven't really had a chance to work with the MUTCD. So let's talk a little bit about what it is. It's a lot of words, a big acronym, but it stands for the Manual on Uniform Traffic Control Devices. And this is really a national standard for traffic control devices. Sometimes we say just TCDs because it can kind of get to be a big word, that are used across the United States on all roadways that are open to public travel. And those could be private roads or public roads, but if public is allowed to travel on them, then those roads need to follow the MUTCD. One of the things that's interesting about it is that it really just deals with traffic control devices. It is not a roadway design manual. The roadway design portion is covered by other design manuals that we use in the industry. So it does not dictate geometric design, the number of lanes that need to be on a roadway, or the width of those lines, or even how a bike path or a shared use path should be designed. It's just about the traffic control devices that are used on those facilities, how those devices should look, how they should be used, and how they should operate. The goal is to have uniformity across the United States so that when you drive from state to state, you're not encountering purple stop signs followed by green stop sign or something of that nature that would just be confusing. Different colored pavement markings. Things of that nature would be confusing to drivers as they go across the U.S. So the idea here is to have uniformity so people know what to expect, whether they're on a roadway, a bicycle path, or a shared use path. You asked about big picture changes. Well, there are big picture changes. It's been a long time since we had a new manual on uniform traffic control devices. The last one was in 2009. So we've gone from 2009 to 2023. So in the span of 14 years, there's been a lot of change in the traffic control industry. Some of the big picture changes and the overarching theme, I would say, to the 11th edition is really about improving safety and accessibility for pedestrians and bicycle users. This includes improving accommodations in work zones for pedestrians. Think about the last time that you walked through or tried to bike through a work zone. It may or may not have been very accommodating for you. Much less if you had vision disabilities, it would probably be even more difficult. So some of the provisions in this edition of the MUTCD will really help with that. There's a lot of change in Part 9 that deals with bicycles. There are lots of new signs, information on pavement markings, and how you actually delineate bicycle lanes. There's also a part that's entirely dedicated to preparing agencies for automated vehicle technologies so that agencies know how they need to start considering the adaptation of their infrastructure for these vehicles as we prepare for the future. Finally, speed limit setting has been a popular topic in the industry for years. Does the setting of speed limits belong in the MUTCD? That's a big question. Well, right now, that's the best place for it to be because there is no other place. So there are a lot of changes and new information in the MUTCD related to speed limit setting, and we'll get into those a little bit later.
You mentioned it's been 13 years since the last MUTCD was published. How many years can we expect before the next, the 12th edition, comes out?
Well, ideally, it would be 4 years. So according to the bipartisan infrastructure law, which was enacted as the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, the MUTCD is to be updated every 4 years. So if it was 2023, we should see another one in 2027.
There's the MUTCD itself, but when you wrote that ITE journal article that I had mentioned in the introduction, you said that people might want to check out the Federal Register notice that was part of the rulemaking process for the 11th edition. Why is that important? Where would people find that?
The thing that's really interesting about the MUTCD and a lot of the work that I've been involved in the last 20 plus years has really been on the rulemaking side. And usually as an engineer, you don't really know much about the rulemaking side of things. You know, for those that might be a little bit older, you might have listened to Schoolhouse Rock when you were young and you had the I'm Just a Bill on Capitol Hill, and then he works into law. So the MUTCD is going through a similar process like that. The Manual on Uniform Traffic Control Devices is referenced in the Code of Federal Regulations. As a result, when FHWA wants to make changes to the MUTCD, it has to go through the rulemaking process so that there can be a period of public comment on any proposed changes. So this is where the Federal Register notice comes to play. Regulations.gov is the website that is used for changes in all federal regulations, whether it's something that's related to Federal Highway Administration, it could be the FAA, it could be federal motor carriers, it could be anything in the world, right, or anything in the U.S. that deals with regulations. So it's really pretty interesting process if you're ever interested in looking at it. It's published every single day, and there are all sorts of different types of topics that deal with federal agencies. As it relates to the MUTCD, the Federal Register notice has a lot of description about the MUTCD, its intent, its background, and particularly for this, that's the final rule, there's explanation between what was proposed in the Notice of Proposed Amendments that was issued in 2020 and what came out in the final rule. Again, going back to what I said about public comment process, that's really the important piece of the Federal Register, looking at what the comments were and what people had to say. So just because something was proposed doesn't mean that it actually makes it into the final rule. There are different agencies, private citizens, it could be folks from state, city, or county agencies, or other organizations that comment on the proposed changes. And so FHWA gets all of those comments and actually does read all of those comments to determine what they want to do with the final rule. So the Federal Register notice gives a very high-level summary of some of the key topics and the comments, then finally their decision. Something that's different this time from past Federal Register notices for final rules is rather than including in the Federal Register notice a description of all the key changes, the Federal Register notice really kind of does the top 10, you know, the Sports Center top 10 items that change. FHWA decided this time to create a table. It's a supplementary table that goes through all the items that were listed in the Notice of Proposed Amendment, over 600 of them, and does a mapping between what was proposed in the NPA and what's in the final rule. So if you had a particular item that you were interested in, maybe you commented on something, you can go into that table and look at what was proposed and then the decision and what was implemented in the final rule. So hopefully this is really helpful to practitioners and especially agencies who may have commented on the notice of proposed amendment and want kind of a quick way to find out what is in the final rule rather than thumbing through 1,100 pages of document. There are also some other items that are included and referenced in the Federal Register. Track changes version of the MUTCD. So you can kind of think of it as a Word document that shows a strike through for language that was deleted, and then it shows underlined text for language that was added. So that allows you to kind of see what the differences were in the text between the 2009 edition and the 11th edition. There's also reference to a regulatory assessment that looks at the costs associated with the changes. That's part of what's required with regulation as well. So agencies who want to look at that are welcome to do that also.
We'll chat some more with Kathy Falk about the MUTCD right after this message.
Do you want to reach more than 17,000 transportation professionals? Podcasts like this one are a great way to reach a dedicated audience of listeners. Sponsoring an ITE Talks Transportation podcast is a cost-effective way to gain exposure and build brand awareness. ITE offers podcasts on key issues like safety, connected and automated vehicles, and transportation management systems and operations, ensuring your message is heard by the right people. For more information, contact Darlene King at dking@thewymancompany.com. That's dking@thewymancompany.com.
I'd like to dig a little deeper on something you talked about. One of the big changes in the latest edition of the MUTCD deals with pedestrians and bicyclists. Tell me a little bit more about what is going on with that and how that theme plays out throughout the manual, if you would please, Kathy.
Over the years, there's been just a much greater emphasis on bicycles and pedestrians. I think we saw a lot of it certainly before COVID, but definitely during COVID, right? All of us were outside trying to walk and bike. We'd been trapped in our houses and really wanted to get out and enjoy the community around us. And I think that was a great impetus to help us get more information into the MUTCD. And one of the ways that new items get into the MUTCD is through experimentation, which then goes through interim approval. Then when FHWA actually works on new additions or revisions to the MUTCD, many times those interim approvals actually get incorporated into the MUTCD. And a lot of that is what you're seeing with this addition. Things like green colored pavement for bike lanes, they really help you see those bike lanes or bike boxes. Bicycle signal faces, that's another interim approval that is now in the manual. Intersection bike boxes, really a cool thing to be able to help separate bicyclists from vehicles, and especially to help them turn at a traffic signal through two-stage bicycle boxes. There's also information that's been added regarding pedestrian-actuated rectangular rapid flashing beacons, or RRFBs, at uncontrolled marked crosswalks. So there are quite a few additional items in the MUTCD that have been brought forward through interim approvals.
We've talked about pedestrians and bicyclists, but obviously there have been other significant changes. Can you just give us an overview of what some of the other things? I think you mentioned some, for instance, autonomous vehicles being one.
So this is really a lot of information that I'm going to try to get through, just some of the highlights. First, I'd like to cover some things that were not in the ITE article for those people who read it. So you're hearing a few new things. One thing is that there is no longer an introduction to the MUTCD. It used to have an introduction followed by the 9 parts. That introduction is now included in part 1. So if you're looking for that information, which is general information about the MUTCD and compliance dates, those are now in part 1. Prior material that was in part 5 has been sprinkled throughout the manual. So prior to this edition, part 5 dealt with low volume roads and specific traffic control devices and treatments that you needed to be used on those roads. That information has now been placed in the appropriate sections within the manual. So if it deals with pavement markings, you'll find that information there. Or if it deals with signs, you will find the information in part 2. That allowed the ability to put automated vehicles in part 5, which, as you mentioned, we spoke about earlier. There's also a lot of reorganization within this manual. FHWA took the time between the 2009 and the 11th edition to really look at the manual and figure out how could some of the chapters or parts be reorganized to make them easier for users. So you will find a lot of reorganization, particularly in Chapter 2E, that deals with guide signs for freeways and expressways in Part 4. And Part 4 has been separated into several more chapters. It now goes through Part 4U. So you'll find a lot of new chapters that you didn't see before. Part 6 in temporary traffic control and Part 7. But getting into the meat of what happened, compliance dates. You'll see a very short table of compliance dates. There are specific provisions that have five-year compliance dates. Those deal with weight limit signs, low clearance signs, letting drivers know before they get to a location that has, say, a bridge overpass, what those clearance heights are, and allowing them to know ahead of time so that they can detour. Same thing for the weight limit signs. Also, some signs dealing with low ground clearance at railroad crossings. So there can be an issue if you have, say, a car or a truck with a trailer attached behind it, where the area where the hitch is hangs up at the railroad space. So to help avoid that and get those vehicles around the railroads, there are signs that indicate that there might be an issue at a known location so that people can detour around that area. There also is a 10-year compliance date for changes to highway traffic control signals near grade crossings. The idea here is to make sure that we have our grade crossings as safe as possible. We're eliminating any potential areas where there might be queues or things of that nature related to the interaction between traffic control signals and railroads. And finally, one of the compliance dates that continues to remain in the manual is that dealing with maintaining minimum retroreflectivity. That's just a carryover from the revision that I spoke about previously to the 2009 edition. So that goes out to 2026. Another item is experimentation. So similar to the MUTCD, you know, being a bill and going through, we have experimentation. A lot of the new items that are in the manual start with experimentation. You know, people want to try new things. What if I use a traffic control device in this manner? Or I've invented this new device. Let's see how well that works. Well, it continues to be that you cannot just go and experiment out on our public roadways with new devices and say, let's do this experiment to see how well it works. You still need to ask FHWA to be able to do that. And certainly if there's already a device that can do that, then the team members at FHWA will work with you to determine how you might be able to do it with existing devices that are in the manual. But they've really improved the process so that if you want to know, hey, is this going to be a thumbs up or a thumbs down before I go through the formal process of submitting an experiment or a request for experimentation, you can just write a short little abstract and submit it to FHWA and then have a conversation. Okay, yes, let's move forward with this and then kind of go through the experimentation request. You'll see that some of the material in the manual came through the experimentation process, such as the green colored pavement and the RRFBs that we spoke about previously. And it's very likely that you will see a new guideline that FHWA produces specific to the experimentation process so that agencies really have a good understanding and feel like they can be a good part of the process to experiment and come up with new techniques for our traffic control devices. Another item is the number of new signs. So what's more exciting than a new sign on our roadway? You know, as soon as we think we know them all, we're going to have some more. There are almost 300 new signs and plaques in the manual. These are new regulatory signs, warning signs, bicycle signs, signs for alternative fuels, and also provisions on really how to provide guide signs for distance and travel times. I know people across the U.S. are seeing that right now, and so that's now actually in the MUTCD, which probably brings you to the question of, how do I know how to design these new signs? What's happening with the standard highway signs book? Well, that's getting updated as well, and FHWA is working on that and has announced that they will be rolling out the new signs over a period of time. So make sure that you're looking at the MUTCD website so that you get that information on when new signs are available in the standard highway system. Another fun one is aesthetic surface treatments. So this is something where you have maybe street work or a mural on the pavement. Some agencies throughout the country have been experimenting with this. Or I use the term experiment lightly, but they've been using different types of paint within crosswalk lines. And there's been a little bit of controversy on this. Is it allowed? Is it not allowed? It's not specifically talked about in the manual. And so there was a proposal to include aesthetic surface treatments in the MUTCD. That is covered in the colored pavements chapter of the 11th edition. This boils down to the information that is between the transverse lines of a crosswalk is not considered a traffic control device. The traffic control device is the transverse lines. The artwork between is not. So as a result, the MUTCD does not specifically govern aesthetic surface treatments. Rather, that comes up to federal, state, and local policies and how they want to work on the area between the lines. So I would expect that we will see some more information on that in the future. There are certainly locations throughout the country that have this. FHWA is also doing experimentations on different types of materials that can be used between the white lines. So look in the future for more information to come on that, but you will see that it is covered in the manual right now to give you a little bit of a heads up. Another item is warrants for pedestrian hybrid beacons. There are new provisions to support expanding its use. These warrants will make it easier for practitioners to determine when it's appropriate to use them. And there's an option to reduce the pedestrian thresholds by up to 50% based on the pedestrian population and the types of walking speeds that they have. So this will really help also with the vulnerable users that we spoke about earlier in this session. Then I'd like to talk a little bit about bicycle lanes. Bicycle lanes, they're a big topic across the U.S. as well. There are new provisions that will really help practitioners with how to design bicycle lanes, the types of markings to use within the lanes, and also you will see provisions about shoulders. So shoulders and bicycle lanes do not mix well. So there is information specifically on how you need to demarcate bicycle lanes, which is different from the use of shoulders. So make sure that you check out part 9 for a lot of new bicycle material. Then going a little bit to what was in the article, and I promised earlier that we talk a little bit more about speed limits, speed limit setting. You'll see a very expanded section, 2B21, specifically related to setting speed limits. It still includes provisions for setting non-statutory speed limits. So there's a difference. You've got statutory speed limits that are set by law based on the locality that you're working in, and then non-statutory. So this is specifically relating to non-statutory speed limits. There is a new standard that requires that speed zones, that is other than statutory speed limits, shall only be established on the basis of an engineering study that's been performed in accordance with traffic engineering practices, and that it shall consider roadway context. And that's really the key here, is the roadway context. The updated guidance also includes provisions on details for 6 factors that should be included in engineering studies. The roadway environment, roadway characteristics, such as the number of driveways, intersection spacing, things of that nature, geographic context, the crash experience in the area, and speed distribution, and the analysis of speed trends. So in the past, there was a recommendation to use the 85th percentile. This is much more expanded to use not only 85th percentile, but also look at 50th percentile, pace speeds, and things of that nature. There's also guidance that clarifies that on urban and suburban arterials and on rural main streets, that the 85th percentile speed should not be used as the sole consideration in setting speed limits. So you need to look at other items besides just speed. Because this is such a hot topic and the question has been out there about whether it belongs in the MUTCD or not, because it goes a little bit beyond what a speed limit sign looks like or how it should be used. Because it's such a hot topic, FHWA is coordinating a separate effort to develop new comprehensive speed limit settings. Another item is marked crosswalks. Marked crosswalks, there's now a recommendation that they should be installed at locations controlled by a traffic signal. So if you have a signal, there really should be pedestrian signals there as well. There is an option to perform a traffic study and determine if there is not a need, but know that you really should have pedestrian signals at traffic control signals as well. Colored pavement, I touched on that very briefly earlier. Aesthetic treatments are included in the same chapter with colored pavement. There's a new standard that lists the colors of pavement that you can use on our roadways, and they're probably ones that you're relatively familiar with. Yellow pavement or white pavement that can be used in between lanes or between different directions of lanes. Then also green, we looked at that a little bit earlier with our bicycle facilities. Red, which can be used with transit facilities. The idea there being to really differentiate lanes that are specifically for use only by transit vehicles. That way those lanes can be free of other vehicles or parked cars. And then purple, lanes that are designated specifically for electronic toll collection. Signal warrants, touch on that a little bit for part four. There is additional information particularly related to the crash warrant. There are additional tables that look at 1 and 3 year periods. Agencies are also able to develop some of their own criteria to go in those tables as well. And overarching, there is a change in the warrants from being standards to guidance, with the idea being that just because you meet the warrants does not mean that a traffic signal is the best traffic control device to use. And many of us have gone by that provision for years, but this is just stated much more clearly with the reduction in warrants from a standard to a guidance, and the idea that there may be other types of traffic control devices or change in geometry or other things that might be beneficial before you go to install a traffic signal. There are also bicycle signal faces. We touched on that a little bit earlier. I really encourage all of you to go to FHWA's MUTCD site. There have been 2 webinars that FHWA produced. One was an executive summary and general overview in early March, and the recording of that is available on the website. There was a 2nd webinar on April 11th dealing specifically with vulnerable users, so our bicycle friends and pedestrians, and that has an overview and gets into a little bit more detail specifically with those provisions.
We've been using the initials MUTCD throughout this podcast. I want to throw out another set of initials and ask you about that. You're chair of the ITE delegation to the NCUTCD. What does that stand for? And tell us a little bit what that group does, please.
Could we have more acronyms? So the N is just national. So it's the National Committee on Uniform Traffic Control Devices. And this committee is a committee of about 300 or so volunteers that specifically meet to discuss the MUTCD and traffic control devices. It's, as I mentioned, a volunteer organization, and it's comprised of all sorts of types of professionals, from folks in the government sector that are with state DOTs, localities, whether it's cities or counties, as well as private sector, which includes consultants, vendors. There are also other organizations that are involved as well. And the purpose is to assist in the development of standards and guidelines and warrants for traffic control devices, and how we really want to use those practices to warn and guide traffic on our streets and highways. The group talks a lot about the MUTCD and can get into very finite detail about the actual language in the MUTCD, all with the thought that this will improve the MUTCD to be more clear and more inclusive so that it is easily understood and used across the country. The organization is supported by 21 sponsoring organizations, each of which who have at least one voting member on the council. The council votes on the items that are brought forth for potential change to the MUTCD. Those organizations include ITE, as well as the American Association of State Highway and Transportation Officials, ASHTO, American Automobile Association. Think of all the people that they represent. It also includes the International Municipal Signal Association and the League of American Bicyclists. That's just to name a few of the 21. But this group meets twice a year. Once, the annual meeting is in January in Arlington, Virginia, and the mid-year meeting is in June, and it currently follows the AASHTO Committee on Traffic Engineering, which is held in different places across the U.S. So it is exciting to get to see traffic control devices in different parts of the U.S. It's really a great group of people. We have several technical committees that generally deal with the various different parts of the manual, as you can imagine. Also, we have other task forces that meet, and a lot of those task forces are cross-cutting across several of the parts of the manual, such as pedestrians, as pedestrian task force. So it's a great group of professionals, very congenial group that likes to have fun together as well as get into the nitty-gritty details of what the language is within the MUTCD. And there's actually an article about the National Committee in the April edition of the IT Journal that people might want to read as well.
Well, Kathy, I want to thank you for summarizing what is a very complex document, over 1,000 pages, a lot of changes that were made. We've been talking on this edition of ITE Talks Transportation with Kathy Falk. She is a vice president with Kimley Horn. Kathy, again, thank you so much for being my guest.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.